If you haven't tried Super Beats Heart Chews, you're missing out. Super Beats Heart Chews are a delicious way that you can support your heart health. Super Beats Chews combine non-GMO beets with a powerful new ingredient, grapeseed extract. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beats Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Better blood pressure means more energy, the way nature intended, without the jittery caffeine or stimulants. Now you can take just 2 delicious chews a day, anytime, anywhere, to get the blood pressure support that you need and the energy that you want. Support your heart health with delicious Super Beats Heart Chews. Get your Super Beats Chews today at danasbeats.com. And when you buy 2 bags, they'll throw in the 3rd for free. That's danasbeats.com to get a free bag of Super Beats Heart Chews when you purchase 2. Support your heart health with Super Beats Heart Chews, available at danasbeats.com. That's danasbeats.com.
Well, first, I wanted to be clear that the person most responsible for what happened on January 6th was Donald Trump, who assembled, inflamed,
and incited the mob
that attacked the Capitol, killed a police officer, and tried to stop the cap. Now, this was completely foreseeable, and it was a failure of leadership by the Capitol Police. It was a failure of leadership by the president, who did not have the National Guard come.
Why is anybody asking Fang Bang anything anyway? Why is anybody asking this guy anything? Yeah, I'm just curious. Welcome to the show, everybody. Dana Lash. It is Thursday, which makes way less sense than Friday. And it's going to be with you. We're finishing out this week together. Number of things to hit this morning. First off, make sure you subscribe to the newsletter because I believe that we're in our final days of all of it, of that discount that you can get. So, and then there is, I prep out for you today, and then I have 2 separate pieces, one on immigration and one on Biden's everything that it began as what he would do on gun control in the first 100 days. And it morphed into this is everything that he would like to do. And this is when he may implement it perspective. So just FYI on that. So there's 2 other pieces that are going to be coming out to you today on that. Anyway, so first and foremost, the latest, I play that Swalwell audio because that's kind of still, it's either you have, which we'll get into, Xavier Becerra saying, I ain't never sued no nuns, which is a total lie. The guy who's going to be HHS, who was it that was, they were having a conversation during the hearing and someone was saying that, he's completely qualified for this role. And who was it that said, well, is he going to sue? Is he going to sue people well? Like, how is that? Because it is a weird choice. But can I just throw something out on the table? We said this in passing. We said it in passing yesterday. Whatever happened to the State of the Union address? Again, said it in passing. And now I really want to know because it was announced by literally all the press. Reuters, Associated Press, name one. CNN had it. Huffington Post had it. Everyone said, now I'm adding the caveat and I've always said it. They said it was tentatively announced for the 23rd of February. I'm like, okay. I had some moron who types like a wife beater would. It's like almost all caps lock. And he's just like, I beat everything. Who was saying, well, it doesn't have to by the Constitution. Listen, wife beater, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about how the press announced that it was tentatively on the 23rd and then it just disappeared. That's what I'm asking. Stop. Stop trying to beat people through the internet. Get help for your anger issues. But it's true, though, that the press announced it and then it just disappeared. And I mean, I'm just curious as to why there isn't a State of the Union address. I made mention of this in prep last night just as because I started thinking more and more about it. I'm like, well, where is it? Now, the only thing that I have been able to gather, and I looked online and I was looking again this morning, and I have like these alerts set up and all this. Are they waiting? Are they using, not waiting, let me phrase it like this. Are Democrats waiting to have a State of the Union address until, and using it as leverage, until they get this coronavirus boondoggle past. Because that seems kind of weird, if that is the case. That's the only thing I can think of. Have any of you heard? Because that's, I mean, that's quite literally the only thing I can think of at this particular point. I'm not quite sure. But this is where, this is, I mean, it's, it was for the 23rd. Now I'm just, you know, saying, I'm just curious as to when it's going to happen. Because it projects, if you're trying to project this image that, no, Biden's totally fine. We're not at all worried about him making a public speech by himself. This isn't the way to convince us, you know, not really the way to. So I'm just, you know, like I said, I'm just like really curious as to where all of that went. And our press is non-curious at all. Not a single. The only thing, if you look at it, the only thing that they've actually been discussing is that there was going to be one tentatively for the 23rd. That's it. That's all they had said. All right, so CPAC kicks off today. I'll be there Saturday. I've got a busy week and a busy weekend. I'll be there Saturday moderating a Second Amendment panel featuring Congresswoman Lauren Boebert. We also have Representative Andy Biggs. He's going to be joining us. Vernon Jones joining us. So it'll be a really good conversation. And I've noticed that everybody's... Who was it that mentioned me? It was late night. It was Jimmy Kimmel, who had me in a skit because they were talking about who's going to be at CPAC, and they showed my photo and called me Crazy Gun Lady, which is an upgrade from Gun Whore. I do want to point that out. Crazy Gun Lady is an upgrade from Gun Whore. They called me ad nauseum forever. But that's going to be in Orlando. And all the, I've noticed that there's a bunch of like shifting and power jockeying amongst Republicans because Trump is expected to speak on Sunday. And everyone... There are people who are looking to see what his tone is going to be and what he's going to say maybe about 2024 or anything else. And then you have the people who are insisting, well, he doesn't get to determine what happens with the party and blah, blah, blah. Well, kind of, yeah. He sort of does. Just saying. Because he got a lot of votes last election. I know there's an asterisk there. But he got a lot of votes. And... he is still technically the de facto leader as the outgoing president emeritus. So why wouldn't he be involved? Because he can raise funds. My gosh, can he raise funds? Some of these people need to not be throwing shade. I'm not going to. Yeah, I probably will name names. I don't have anything. And we played that audio soundbite yesterday. That awkward moment between Kevin McCarthy and Liz Cheney. I don't have anything against Liz Cheney. I don't agree with her on everything. But I'm just a little confused as to her strategy. So the thing with, and I again, this was out in the newsletter last night too. But the weirdness between her and Kevin McCarthy when they were asked about CPAC, and Kevin McCarthy was like, yeah, he's going to speak at CPAC. And Liz Cheney had said, no, he doesn't get to decide the future of the party, whatever. That was once again the schism between those two spilling out into the public, because Kevin McCarthy is the leader of the House minorities, the House minority Republicans. And if they assume majority again, he'll be House Speaker. Well, Liz Cheney wants to be House Speaker. So she can't do that with Kevin McCarthy in the way. And there are individuals that are trying to manipulate McCarthy by saying that refusal to kind of shut down any sort of discussion about the involvement of Trump or even Trump voters or Trump supporters in the direction of the party is somehow kowtowing to Trump, which is really it's specious because he's not doing either. In fact, he's actually accurately triangulating here because he is incorporating and trying to hold together this big tent, which, to get to my confusion aspect as to Liz Cheney, she doesn't seem to be wanting to do. Because that's very much on offense to say, well, he doesn't get to determine, you know, etc. If you're trying to maintain a big tent and you're also trying to get to bring together two factions of the same in the same party, I would just think that you would approach it in a little bit more different regard. Right. And you wouldn't necessarily have to play so aggressively. So I don't know what the motive is there, but I'm just really confused because There's a thing about being on offense, and then there's the thing about treating everything like it's a, like, you know, when you're a hammer, everything's a nail. So I just think that maybe that ought to be modified a bit, because that's not going to work for anybody. All right. So in the meantime, Democrats have a problem. So you have Andrew Cuomo. The pressure is intensifying. More and more people are coming out to discuss not only how he apparently is treating the gubernatorial mansion, the governor's office, as a, I guess, like a Godfather Part Four, but now he's being accused by a senior aide, not 40 years ago, but recently. I mean, 2018 recently, Lindsay Boylan, accusing him of kissing her in his office. She left her job as special advisor to him soon after. You want to have a discussion about credible witnesses? A lot of the things that she's saying falls right into pattern. I mean, her timeline, everything else. And when you hear, I saw a clip last night that was circulating where he was saying that he was joking about how he was like a certified vaccinator and he could vaccinate people. And then he spent like a minute and 30 seconds talking about what body part he would vaccinate you in, which was really awkward and uncomfortable, even for a guy that doesn't have a sexual harassment scandal hanging over his head. Wow. It was really awkward. It was like listening to one of your grandparents talk about intimate times. That's how awkward it was. And I just couldn't, it was major, like top level cringe. And so when he just makes you, it's like his behavior doubles down on every accusation. You watch him do stuff like that and you're like, I can totally believe this dude did that. I can totally believe it. She says that it happened at least four times in 2018 and she left as a result of it. She said she wrote an essay on Medium. I tried to play it cool, but I just realized how acquiescent I had become in that moment. And so she was, and he propositioned her apparently, and that he kissed her without her consent, and she was not having it, so she did leave. And this is just, maybe Democrats will pretend to care about women and do something about this, since clearly they don't care about the elderly people that were sentenced to death in these nursing homes as a result of his order. Just asking about that. All right. So that's where, and we'll see how his office is reacting, because so far all they've said was, well, this is absolutely not true. And they released a statement. They went and asked some of their friends to release statements. And John Maggiore, Howard Zemsky, Danny Lever, and Abby Collins to say, no, this never happened. I don't know. Lindsay Boylan. I mean, them's the rules, right? Women must be believed. Believe all women. Yeah. These are the rules.
Investigations have to happen.
You know, do you notice that these are always top Democrats? Like major players within the Democrat Party. Mm-hmm. Weinstein, Clinton, Cuomo. Right. It's weird. I'm not saying there's a problem, but I am saying that there's a problem. Oh my gosh. So the other big story that everyone's discussing, and I have never heard anything like this. Washington Times has the story of how Democrats are asking Joe Biden to hand over the nuclear football, the codes. They want him to cede authority on nuclear launches. Yeah, we're going to talk about that coming up, because that's troubling to me. That's constitutionally not their arena. They don't even have that authority. So we're going to talk about that. We have headlines on the way. In 2021, loungewear isn't just for lounging. It is for everything. And this means you need to have loungewear for every occasion. When you're wearing Tommy John men's and women's loungewear, you're that much more comfortable. So you can do everything better. That's why Tommy John doesn't have customers. They have fanatics. The thing I love most about my Tommy John joggers is that it's like wearing fancy pajamas during the day, and it makes it acceptable. And I love it and I embrace it, because it's 2021 and I can do what I want. It's time to trade up whatever you were sporting last year and lounge like a stylish pro with Tommy John. Tommy John loungewear is guaranteed to fit perfectly with comfy, non-pilling, hallelujah, micromodal fabric, which means no lint balls or fuzz, and luxuriously soft tri-blend fabric with four-way stretch. So basically that means it's super comfortable and it doesn't pill. It's the same level of comfort and innovation that goes into everything Tommy John makes, including over 13 million pairs of Tommy John underwear. Returns and exchanges are free, and right now you'll get 15% off your first order at TommyJohn.com/Dana. That's 15% off Tommy John loungewear, underwear, and bralettes at TommyJohn.com/Dana. That's TommyJohn.com/Dana. See site for details.
Check out all 3 hours of The Dana Show live on official Dana Lash on Facebook, YouTube.com/The Dana Show, or Channel 244 on Pluto TV.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Kel-Tec.
So this is how far we've gone. Mr. Potato Head is no longer Mr. Potato Head. This is an actual thing, according to the AP. Hasbro gave the tater a gender-neutral name. Basically, all they did was drop Mr. It's just Potato Head. This is the stupidest thing ever. Toy makers have been updating their classic brands. They have a Mrs. Potato Head, dummies. They've been updating their classic brands to appeal to kids today, i.e., they've been ruining toys to appeal to kids who have been ruined by bad parents. Barbie doesn't have, she's not like, I don't know, I don't really care about Barbie. But they said American Girl has a boy doll. By the way, that was also done with the My Buddy. Have you ever met My Buddy? Because My Buddy was here before you, American Girl, with your American boy doll. I just think that the Potato Head is stupid. Like, we're calling it Potato Head. It's never going to be Potato Head. We're always going to call this thing Mr. Potato Head. And the only difference between Mr. Potato Head and Mrs. Potato Head was Mrs. Potato Head had pink lips in her butt, whereas Mr. Potato Head did not. That's where they kept them, by the way, in case... Please tell me that people are aware of this, right? You kept all the parts. You put it in the behind of the tater. Yeah, the little butt flap, right? It was like those old-timey jammies that you see in the cartoons. So that's silly. It's silly. Hitting the gym is not going to actually make you lose weight. Some scientists. They say because we burn the... This one scientist, Herman Poncer, says that we burn the same amount of calories every day regardless of lifestyle, and that people should focus instead on diet. So I think there is something to it, but however, you want to be toned. Because I've gone to the gym every single day, and I've kickboxed 3 times a week, and I had to do a Bark and Berries thing because of a heart issue that they had suspected that thankfully was not, and it was like the same effect, but you would rather replace fat with muscle. So I just think that maybe there should be like a little, you know, just don't buy into all of that stuff. You know what? Eat what you want to eat with moderation, and then just be healthy, be active, right? Good heavens. And muscle does burn fat. Can people stop with the Gorilla Glue? I'm done. I'm so done. This guy learns his lesson, according to the Western Journal. He tried to create a Gorilla Glue challenge, and it did not go the way that he expected it would because he glued a stupid cup to his mouth and had to go to the hospital. Stop it. Stop doing this. And they got mad at kids freaking Tide Pods. If you haven't tried Super Beats Heart Chews, you're missing out. Super Beats Heart Chews are a delicious way that you can support your heart health. Super Beats Chews combine non-GMO beets with a powerful new ingredient, grapeseed extract. The grapeseed extract used in Super Beats Chews has been clinically shown to be 2 times as effective at supporting normal blood pressure as a healthy lifestyle alone. Better blood pressure means more energy, the way nature intended, without the jittery caffeine or stimulants. Now you can take just 2 delicious chews a day, anytime, anywhere, to get the blood pressure support that you need and the energy that you want. Support your heart health with delicious Super Beats Heart Chews. Get your Super Beats Chews today at danasbeats.com. And when you buy 2 bags, they'll throw in the 3rd for free. That's danasbeats.com to get a free bag of Super Beats Heart Chews when you purchase too. Support your heart health with Super Beats Heart Chews, available at danasbeats.com. That's danasbeats.com.
Want a deeper dive into The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana Lash's chapter and verse newsletter by visiting danalash.com and clicking on the subscribe tab. Don't worry, your info is safe with her.
Lessons, if not exposed to medical intervention and social affirmation. Dr. Levine, do you believe that minors are capable of making such a life-changing decision as changing one's sex?
Well, Senator, thank you for your interest in this question. Transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field with robust research and standards of care that have been developed. And if I am fortunate enough to be confirmed as the Assistant Secretary of Health, I will look forward to working with you and your office and coming to your office and discussing the particulars of the standards of care for transgender medicine.
The specific question was... The question was about minors. Let's be a little more specific since you evaded the question. Do you support the government intervening to override the parent's consent to give a child puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and or amputation surgery of breasts and genitalia? You have said that you're willing to accelerate the protocols for street kids. I'm alarmed that poor kids with no parents who are homeless and distraught, you would just go through this and allow that to happen to a minor. I would hope that you would have compassion for Kira Bell, who's a 23-year-old girl who was confused with her identity. At 14, she read on the internet about something about transsexuals. She thought, well, maybe that's what I am. She ended up getting these puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones. She had her breasts amputated. But here's what ultimately she says now. And this is a very insightful decision from someone who made a mistake but was led to believe this was a good thing by the medical community. I made a brash decision as a teenager, as a lot of teenagers do, trying to find confidence and happiness, except now the rest of my life will be negatively affected, she said, adding that the medicalized gender transitioning was a very temporary, superficial fix for a very complex identity issue. What I'm alarmed at is that you're not willing to say absolutely minors shouldn't be making decisions to amputate their breast or to amputate their genitalia. For most of our history, we have believed that minors don't have full rights and the parents need to be involved. So I'm alarmed that you won't say with certainty that minors should not have the ability to make the decision to take hormones that will affect them for the rest of their life. Will you make a more firm decision on whether or not minors should be involved in these decisions?
Senator, transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field, and if confirmed to the position of Assistant Secretary of Health, I would certainly be pleased to come to your office and talk with you and your staff about these.
To me, it doesn't seem like he's taking it seriously. I'm fine, and welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash, danalash.com. Good to be with you all today. That is Senator Rand Paul during one of the Senate hearing back and forths with Joe Biden's, one of his picks. And this would be someone who would be leading. I mean, this is a top health official in Pennsylvania. And this would be one of the big assistants in at HHS. Not like running HHS, but like one of the top people anyway. Dr. Rachel Levine to be Assistant Secretary of Health. And I don't mind calling him Rachel, but again, I'm not going to be lectured by the patriarchy. I have freedom of speech, and we women had to struggle to get our right to vote, and I will be damned if I allow the patriarchy to then dictate my free speech and tell me what pronouns I can or can't use. So that's not answering the question. And it almost seems like he was kind of, I mean, I'm sure he was being serious, but it seems like he was almost, it was almost like a mockery of the whole thing. And the virtue signaling, like sometimes he would have a mask on and then other times he would have a mask off. And then when he would put the mask back on, he would talk in front of the microphone without a mask. No one was around him. And then he would put the mask back on and talk to in the microphone, which I'm like, what is this? Nothing has changed around you in your environment. There's no one else closer to you. But that, and of course, these are questions that he should be able to answer in the setting. Yep. And if you can't answer these questions, then I think that calls into question your credentials. It really does. That's all. We've been discussing this it's the Gender Equality Act. This is what you've been seeing the flag fight over with Marjorie Taylor Greene and the other lady who's, sponsoring it or something to that effect. This is, and we're going to get into this a little bit more, but this is one of the pieces of legislation that they're getting ready to debate. It's this bill that this was the basis for which Joe Biden was accused of erasing women. And from because this had to do with federal funds going to public schools. And if public schools were not allowing men to compete in women's sports, then those schools would be, they would lose that federal funding based on that rule. And that's obviously a concern. And there have been women who have been speaking out about this. There have been female athletes who have been speaking out about this. And they're not being heard. They're not being heard, and it's the Equality Act. They're not being heard, and in fact, women are slurred and they are attacked in a horrifically sexist fashion if they even so much as bring up concerns, not just about their security, but also about protections in sports, etc. I mean, it's a serious thing. It's the Equality Act, and they've been debating it. I don't know if they're, I mean, I think it'll pass in the House easily, and then it goes to the Senate, which it's going to be a little bit tougher in the Senate. But there's a good chance that it'll pass, just to be honest about it. I mean, there's a very good chance that it'll pass. And it's about expanding the government's definition. And I don't think that the government should have any involvement in this as to what is or is not bigotry. And I don't think that taxpayer dollars should have any part in this. Not at all. And so the restrictions on eligibility for federal funding, I mean, we've already kind of seen this play out with Catholic adoptions and, you know, et cetera. We saw that play out in Illinois. But I don't know. This is there's a lot of things to be concerned about with this, but particularly I do agree that it is the erasing of women in this administration. There won't be any protections for women. There won't be any spaces for women to compete. Women's athletics will be entirely just completely destroyed. And we're seeing that more and more. There have been more and more female athletes speaking out about this. It is absolutely abusive for the patriarchy to condescend to females and tell women that they are bigoted because of their concerns, where women have been taught for a millennia, trust your instincts, you know, and if you feel unsafe, get out of the situation, etc. And now we're being told that all of these feelings, like if we're in a, you know, bathroom or a fitting room or a locker room, etc., now we're being told that we're bigoted for having these, any of these concerns. And that's, I think it's absolutely abusive. This is state sanctioned abuse of women is what it is. And I do think that and it can go both ways with women who want to identify as men. Nobody has a problem with what you want to do in your private life. But when you start trying to demand that other people alter their reality to match yours, that's where you're infringing on other people's freedoms. You are not the victim in that case. You are the aggressor. And you are victimizing others. We have more on this as well, because I want to make sure we hit a bunch of other things this hour, but we're going to get into some, like what all of that would mean with this piece of legislation. All right. So a couple of other things too, to get into. The Gavin Newsom, this is actually going to be a reality. So this was pretty stunning. LA Magazine, they came out with a piece asking whether or not Gavin Newsom was blowing it. They actually said that, is Gavin Newsom blowing it? Because he was another individual who was considered a 2024 potential, but now I think that's been ruined. The thing is that really Republicans didn't even have to do anything to kneecap these potential 2024 Democrat candidates. They didn't have to do anything. Democrats did this to themselves. They did this entirely to themselves. And with media protection to boot. The media was running interference for them and doing everything they could to protect them. And even still, that's how the fact that these stories are seeping through it all indicates how bad this is. So he's I see him maybe going for Senate someday and trying to make a comeback, but I do not see this guy going for president. I really don't. He'll try, but I don't see him being successful. Cuomo's pretty much done at this point. And it's getting worse. Here's a headline for you. Are you guys ready for this one? We haven't really seen a lot about Hunter Biden, except heard his name in questions talking to, during some of the hearings as to whether or not people like Merrick Garland would protect the Biden family during these three separate independent investigations. That was it. Now more information is coming out about Hunter Biden's activities. So according to Daily Mail, Hunter Biden was living with his brother Beau's widow, Hallie, with her married sister as they declared their love, and she called him her prince. He began dating his late brother's widow, and that was first came out in March 2017. And at the same time, Elizabeth Secundi at the exact same time. And remember the laptop hard drive? Some of the text, I can't even actually tell you what the texts are because they're disgusting. And one conversation in 2016 that he had had with her, a creeper would proposition you with on the internet. It's just disgusting. Yeah. And she called Hunter her prince. And told him that she loved him in texts. And another conversation, Hunter texted. And this was his current girlfriend, who was also his brother's widow's sister. And he texted her that he had been up late, quote, watching bad porno movies like I'm 13, end quote. Oh? And that's so gross. So it just... So this is just the latest with his involvement and some of his relationships and some of the stuff that's been coming out about this. It's just bad. This is gross. I'm going to leave you with that while we take a quick break here. We have more of the Dana Show coming up after this.
Dana Lash, your social media debate teacher. Do your homework by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, this is a band from Canaan, my hometown.
Yeah.
DanaLash.com. And I saw this yesterday, in fact, when I was trying to get some, I was online and I was doing some prep for the show and all this stuff. And we're having some technical issues, by the way, today. I think it's still a vestige of whatever happened from last week, but it's kind of a nightmare. But anyway, I was online and I saw just some of these like Missouri operatives, you know, talking about just like who could primary who, et cetera. And I know that Democrats, they're mad at Josh Hawley and they really don't like Roy Blunt. These are two senators from my home state of Missouri. Now, Josh Hawley, remember, he took that seat from Claire McCaskill, right? And Roy Blunt used to be in House of Representatives and then he ran for Senate, and he's been senator for a bit now. So I saw this discussion happening, and they were talking as to whether or not the former disgraced guy had to resign governor, Eric Greitens, whether or not he was going to challenge Roy Blunt in a primary. Or Greitens, however you say his name. I am on record, and being from Missouri, I know more than the average bear. So I really don't, you know, I know a lot about this, so, and I appreciate other people having a perspective on it, but, and I'm very Dagny Taggart, and I'm not going to pretend to know less to make other people feel better about actually knowing less. I know more than most people on this. And I am not a fan. I have not been from day one. And I'm never wrong about such judgments like this, character calls. So anyway, Greitens was the guy who, you know, he had a basement affair and there were accusations that it was non-consensual and all this other stuff. And he ended up having to leave the office disgracefully. And then there were accusations of impropriety with money. And he brought this on himself and he kept trying to act like it was this progressive witch hunt, which no, the progressive witch hunt was that of Trump. It wasn't with Greitens. It wasn't with this guy. You don't create a poo-nado and then be like, well, everybody else did it. No, you did. You did it. So Democrats are like, boy, what if he were to challenge? At first, I misinterpreted it as him challenging Hawley, which I was like, who, boy, let this happen. And then now that it's Blunt, L-O-L-E-L-O-H-E-L, let it happen. That would be hysterical because all they would have to do for the campaign ad, Greitens, who I know has been trying to rehabilitate himself with people who don't exactly know what's going on, all they would have to do, do you remember when he called Marine veteran John Bruner and basically threatened him on the phone? This would be the campaign ad, right? This is an actual phone call. Listen to this guy. Sounds nuts.
Eric, I told you I'm free.
Oh, John. Where can you meet tomorrow, John?
Why, when we just agreed at 7 o'clock at Starbucks
John,
on Monday...
John, I have a flight on Monday morning. If
they were in a primary together.
You're going to duck this, all right?
I'm not ducking anything,
right,
Eric.
Now. I want to meet
with you. Oh, so you have a conflict in your schedule and demanding
John
I adapt to you.
Bruner. Oh, my God. You are such a weasel. Are you going to meet tomorrow or not?
Eric,
you name the place.
Eric, we just agreed.
You name the place, John.
Eric, we just agreed for 7 a.m. on Monday.
John, tomorrow.
Eric, don't get so yelling. Why are you yelling so much, Eric?
I can't wait to see you in person, my friend. I cannot wait.
Why is that, Eric?
I can't wait to see you in person, John.
You really? Well, good. I've been asking for 2 months to meet with you.
Good.
And we haven't met. And now we're having a chance to meet at 7 a.m. on Monday. You told me at Euclid, the Starbucks in Euclid. You said Euclid at 7 a.m. on Monday, and we agreed to it.
Oh, Jesus, you're such a coward, John. Are you going to meet tomorrow or not?
Eric, what happened to Monday?
You're a coward, that's what I said.
This goes on for like 2 minutes, and we're going to just keep it and save it. Because I'm going
to
play it ad nauseum if he actually does decide to run. I'm going to have so much fun with that. He and Bruner were in a primary together. And then he got in trouble because this girl said that he had, you know, there was some bad stuff. And remember what I was saying about Cuomo? Yeah, I believe he did it.
Let me give a broader description of what's happening here. We have a number of unaccompanied minors, children, who are coming into the country without their families. What we are not doing, what the last administration did, was separate those kids, rip them from the arms of their parents at the border.
Okay,
we are not doing that. That is immoral, and that is not the approach of this administration.
I've got it. So I talked about this last night on Hannity. Welcome back to the show, Dana Lash. DanaLash.com. Subscribe to Chapter and Verse, the newsletter, because right now you still have a couple of more days to take advantage of that discount. It's like, you know, without the discount, it's $6 a month, which still isn't a lot. But you get my prep list and deep dives, and I have a couple of other pieces coming out for you. So I really want to get into this. Talked about this yesterday, and I made mention too, and Kane and I discussed this. I don't know why they're saying that they're ripping children from the arms of parents, unaccompanied minors, because they're unaccompanied by adults. So I'm not quite sure who you're ripping them, whose arms you're ripping them from. But furthermore, so I went and I was looking at one of the other things that I saw last night related to this particular location in Carrizo Springs, Texas, is everyone was saying, oh, is so out of the way, like they want to hide those children away there. I saw that all over social media last night. So I decided to dive into, and you're going to get this in a newsletter, I decided to dive into the history of Carrizo Springs, this little location where they are having these kids stay in what is essentially a she shed. And Carrizo Springs, this location that they have these kids in, it's what they call a man camp for an oil field. That's why they have certain existing infrastructure there. And when the government has ownership, it makes sense, right? Especially if they're trying to be cost effective and have a safe and secure location with an infrastructure that they can rely upon. Yeah, duh. So I'm not like, why is no one, you know how long it took me to find that? Not very long at all. I went back and I was looking at, you know, how they housed people and all that other stuff. And these, each of these little, essentially, and I'm calling them she sheds because I like saying that word, that it's, I mean, they have AC and they have electricity, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the reasons why they're using this location as well, yes, you do have an influx of individuals coming to the border to take advantage of the Flores Amendment. And if you're unfamiliar with the Flores Amendment, that's the, that was the new addition to immigration law that stated if you have adults coming over with minors, then those individuals basically get a fast pass through processing and they get released from detainment quicker. And so that's why you started to see this surge of children coming with adults, many of them not even related, across the border because of specifically the Flores Amendment. And you did not have that spike until after that went into effect. And I went back and I looked at the passage of it and I was looking at statistics as it relates to, I was thinking about how in the weeds I wanted to get with this. The 30,000 foot view is that has done so much to encourage individuals bringing in minors across the border. And then it was after that that you started to see the whole rent-a-kid thing, which is an absolutely true thing. You'll see that cited for the subscribers, our paid subscribers, you'll see that cited. Where families who need money will allow their children to be used to get adults across the border and in and out of these detainment centers faster than individuals who do not travel with children. So consider that. And then also the reason why these facilities needed to be reopened. And I'm not even, here's the thing, I'm not actually against Biden reopening these. I'm really not. I am more against Biden talking about this open border stuff and the Flores, etc., than I am over this. This is a consequence of not being strong on border security and not projecting the deterrent against unauthorized entry. This is a symptom of that. Now, to my point that I was about to make as to why these facilities are being reopened, consider the pandemic, because the other argument that I saw on social was that, well, it's still not at the level that it was under Obama, Biden, blah, blah, blah. But we are in a pandemic and you cannot have so many individuals housed in one singular building. You have to space everyone out. Thus, this facility is reopened again also as a consequence of that. But none of this nuance is coming into play when people are having these discussions. Here's something else that would be that's interesting for you to know. So when these unaccompanied minors, as they are called, or these children are brought in with adults that are illegally entering the United States, usually when they end up in detainment centers, the detainment centers are ICE run, right? It is ICE run. It is government run. The entity in Carrizo Springs, that facility is not run by, they're not the same people. It's run by a nonprofit, actually, BCFS. And this was a piece in the Washington Post that you'll also receive. But it's run by BCFS. And this is a nonprofit it's still with the government. It's with Health and Human Services, but it is a contractor with HHS. And it's a contractor with the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is an agency. They contracted it within HHS, and it focuses specifically and exclusively on unaccompanied children. So there is, for those individuals, and I will add that was also the same under Trump. This facility was only open for 1 month under Trump. And at that time, that's when you had the walkout with Wayfair, etc. And this was when they were trying to curtail the unaccompanied minors and they were trying to get rid of the Flores Amendment, etc. Now, I don't know why people are freaking out over this. You wanted an open borders type situation. People have to be processed. You created this problem. Do you want these children to be kept in crappier conditions? Do you want them to be kept in gen pop, basically, with adults? Because that's what this solves. Regardless of where you stand on this issue at all, let's not be stupid. This is what this solves. It is a separate entity from the government, a separate government contracted entity that runs that is different from the entity that runs the other detainment facilities that house adults. That's how it was under Trump. Now, some say that actually makes it a little better and easier because the group that's doing it specifically focuses on kids. I was listening to this one woman who is a community activist, and I think she's an utter moron. She said, when I read they were opening again, I cried. What? I consoled myself with the fact that it was considered the Cadillac of centers. But I don't think Biden's going to make it better. This woman who is a community activist in San Antonio. This is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. What is your solution? I mean, because people, you can't just be like, hey, come on in, everybody. Do you do that in your home? And that is a completely acceptable equivalent variable to use, by the way. Do you do that to your home? People must be processed. I actually think adults that bring in children and try to take advantage of that should be punished more harshly than adults, particularly if they are not related to the children. Adults that are using children to enter the country illegally because of Flores, I think, should be punished harshly because it encourages trafficking, and that must be stopped, and we need a strong deterrent. But see, you would have to, that would come into conflict with the Flores Amendment. Do you see how this is all so unbelievably a giant cluster blank? But, and this, because the camp has amenities, and I don't know why people are upset with this. What else are you going to do? Unless you're going to pay for them to have a room at the Ritz, the hell else are you going to do? It's almost like they don't really actually care about the kids. I wish that I disagree with and staunchly oppose the green light and the reduction of vetting where it concerns entry. And I also do not support in any way illegal entry. And I think that people who illegally enter and bring kids that aren't even ours as a way to exploit the Flores, which isn't a loophole, it's the loophole, it's the law. I think they should be punished. I think Flores should be done away with. But I see zero problem with this facility. I would rather have this facility for kids than just no offense to ICE, but just a regular detainment center, particularly when you consider the number of adults that are coming in. ICE is overwhelmed with the number of adults. Do you want kids just like randomly? No. Now, the reason for the separation and Jen Psaki, as we said, that was so that they could vet individuals. I have a lot of data that's going to be going out about that, those statistics. So this is a really just insane. What they realized is that, wow, Trump actually was right in how he handled this. So we're going to have to do the same thing. I mean, honestly, ask yourself, like, what are you opposed with? So you're arguing that you would rather for them to be, instead of the Office of Refugee Resettlement contracted through HHS, BCFS, and specifically focusing on unaccompanied children, you would rather it just be ICE that is already overburdened and those general detainment facilities where they can be thrown in with adults that they may not even know. So that's what you're saying that you're endorsing. That is not a straw man argument. That is literally your other option. So if you're against this, then clearly it's completely logical to assume that you support the latter. That's how logic works. So it's just crazy. Now, here's another thing. I wanted to play this audio soundbite really quickly. This is Josh Hawley, because the FBI has been checking House members' cell phone data, looking into the investigation of state-linked, like, terror or whatever. This is all related to January 6th. Listen to Hawley here.
Yes.
The issue here is, and we've seen this movie before, we've seen these law enforcement agencies go way over and above and sweep in law-abiding activity. We've seen the corporations get in on this act. You reported about Bank of America voluntarily, apparently, turning over customers' personal data. Now we've got the telecoms, apparently, turning over, it's reported, the messages, cell phone data of folks who we have no reason to believe were anything other than law-abiding. I mean, this is really, really frightening stuff. And to those who say we need a new domestic war on terror that will give even more unaccountable power to these law enforcement agencies without any kind of oversight, boy, that is a scary prospect, and I'm totally opposed to it. There needs to be real oversight here and real accountability.
Yeah. We're going to talk more about this coming up, because related to that, have you seen the story that there was a Florida woman who was talking smack about the FBI on TikTok, and she ended up, and that's ultimately what it was, and she was, you know, drinking, and she was, you know, she's talking smack. Well, the feds went after her, and they finally agreed to release her, but they went after her. I have that story as well, because you can't even smack talk. Everybody smack talks the feds. What are you talking about? We're going to talk about this coming up as well, so you don't want to miss it. And why is Costco trending? Oh, for the love. Can we just have a day where something stupid does not happen? One day is all I ask. Why is it trending? Patriot Mobile is a longtime supporter of my show, helping to bring you free conservative radio. This year, Patriot Mobile is bringing even more to my loyal listeners with expanded wireless coverage. If you've contacted Patriot Mobile before and they didn't have the coverage you wanted, I urge you to call now. Their expanded coverage also comes with even lower pricing options. As America's only Christian conservative wireless service provider, you get the broadest coverage of any provider on dependable nationwide 4G LTE networks with a company you can trust. Patriot Mobile gives back a portion of every dollar earned to support organizations in which you believe. Call now and receive Patriot Mobile's premier activation at no additional charge. Call the U.S.-based team at 972-PATRIOT or visit patriotmobile.com/Dana. Use promo code Dana for premier activation and a free gift. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana, promo code Dana, or call 972-PATRIOT. Patriot Mobile, their plans, your freedom.
Follow Dana on Twitter at DLash and official Dana Lash on Facebook.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
So Gallup has a new poll out saying that 56% of Americans say that they're not satisfied with gun laws and policies. It's Gallup. But the way that they have done their info, when I was looking at the data, the crosstabs for it, there was like zero change in any attitude since the last poll that they had. There was zero change in any of their answers. And their methodology is off. And also, they didn't ask like the, you know, some of the most important questions at all. Like, what do you know about gun laws? That seems kind of like it's important to ask when you're looking at this. This is a sad little headline. Listen how sad this little headline is. Oh my gosh. Japanese Prime Minister appoints Minister of Loneliness to cabinet. That's like the gothest thing I've ever heard. Is his name Robert Smith? Japanese Prime Minister has appointed a Minister of Loneliness to his cabinet in response to a recent rise in suicides. The Prime Minister, he created it in early February. Apparently, the UK created its own role. Did you guys know that? UK has this too in 2018? That's when they did it. And it should, because they're dealing with this, you know, an increase in suicides. So now they have this, you know, Minister of Loneliness. I mean, it's sad. Stick with us. We got a lot in store.
How dare you be uninformed?
How dare you?
Let Dana get you up to speed by subscribing to the podcast on Apple Podcasts.
Yesterday, I discussed the K-12 crisis facing American families. The science shows that in-person schooling can easily be made safe. Private and religious schools and schools in Europe have been open for months. But Washington Democrats have apparently bought into Big Labor's myth that schools cannot reopen without even more federal funding, even though their own plan would only spend about 5% of the money this fiscal year.
That is, by the way, does Mitch McConnell, welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash, just to clarify. Does he ever get excited? He has the same tone. He is very Ben Steinish.
True.
He's like the Senate version of Ben Stein, who served in Reagan's administration. But Mitch McConnell, I don't think ever does anything except smile in a smart-aleck fashion and raise his eyebrows. Mm-hmm. That's it. He seems so hysterical to me. They will never come on the show because I criticized him once on immigration. People are weird like that. But he seems so funny to me. But I would like to see him and John Kennedy interact more. Because John Kennedy is the complete opposite of Mitch McConnell's countenance. Oh, my gosh. It's too good. All right. So, but what he's discussing here in that soundbite that we played is that schools can't reopen unless they have more funding, right? And that's just simply, it's not true. More Americans now say academic concerns should be the top factor in deciding to reopen schools. This is a new study from Pew that I actually think, let me pull this up, because if I have this, let me get my notes, bring my notes back up. I believe this oversampled Democrats on this. I mean, just double check. Because that's the thing. That's a common ground issue. Like we want, if I thought as a parent that, and you guys know me as a parent, right? Everybody, yeah. Okay, it's Mama Dana. If I thought that schools were a breeding ground, if any responsible parent thought that schools were a breeding ground for transmission, there is no way in ever loving HE double hockey sticks that parents would be letting their kids go to school. That is not the case, though. Contact tracing in New York proves that's not the case. Contact tracing in Texas proves that's not the case. Contact tracing, I mean, everywhere where they have done these contact tracings to see where transmissions are occurring, schools have consistently been at the bottom of the list, not even garnering an entire percentage point. This is science that I thought we were following. And so this is it. I think it's so insulting for others to say, well, they just want babysitters. Parents just want babysitters, or they may be working parents. That is such a classist thing to say, by the way, and shame on these people who say it. Shame on them. Shame. That is a classist, bigoted thing to say. Because people care about their kids more. My mother, when I was a little kid, when I was in elementary school and that, I mean, it was just me and my mom had to work two jobs. There's no way that she had to let me go to a place. No, even though she had to work, there's no way. Maybe, I don't know, people could just give some of these parents the benefit of the doubt. I keep seeing all of these stories about the effect that this is having on kids. And it's so worrisome. It's just very concerning. There was a story of a boy who, this one teenager who committed suicide because he was just lonely. He was lonely and it's sad. He had a room by himself in school, freshman student. It was Wentworth Institute of Technology. He was confined to his single dormitory. They didn't find him for 5 days. And the students were made to live in single dormitories. They had to pick up food and they weren't allowed to attend social gatherings, and they would fine the students if they were to break any of these rules. My son who's in college, if this was the situation with him in college, I would have pulled him out. Because that's not worth it. I mean, this is monstrous. There's no reason why, with these schools, why we get. And the other thing is, too, and this is why people are getting so upset over some of the things that Fauci is saying. Well, maybe you can hug your grandparents, etc. We keep hearing different percentages of which I realize, you know, might be speculation, but we kept hearing different things about herd immunity. I was looking for the word herd immunity. And April, one epidemiologist said that it would be about April to have herd immunity. I can't see our kids doing. I think it's gone on for too long anyway. With the kids in school, like my son is struggling to remain an honor roll kid. My youngest. Super smart kid. He already knows what he wants to do in life. He wants to go into computer programming. He is very much an engineer. He loves math. He says that computer languages should be taught like a foreign language in schools. He thinks that all language is stupid because it's subjective and that math is the only consistent language. Look at Kane rolling his eyes. I cannot deal. So I am very much like an English, you know, what do they say that in math, in the discipline of math, that you can kind of tell what sort of side brain someone is by if they do well in geometry or if they do well in algebra. I had like 100, I got over 100% in my algebra or my geometry class. I had to go to tutors every day of the week to get like a high C in algebra. I aced everything else, but I had to fight for algebra, man. Fight for it so hard. I was doing my math homework. There's just something about it that it's very difficult for me to compute. But the crazy thing is, and this is going to be kind of an aside, when I went to college and I took multiple semesters of logic, and then I had to take an algebra class after to meet a requirement, I did better in algebra than I ever did in my life after I took logic. I don't know if there's something there, but I've always been it because it was like it rewired my brain. And I just, but anyway, my son is very logical, very dry humored, very, you know, and he's like, math is the only consistent language. And he's like, everything is math. Everything is, every music is math. Like he gets it. He's very, whereas my oldest son is exactly like me. Completely. But my youngest son has my temperament, but my oldest son is like, you know, in every other way, he's exactly like me. But it's just interesting because he was noting this as well. I've noticed that his friends and like the other parents with all of this happening, we've had to really go above and beyond to make sure that these kids are socialized. I have had, and I say this as a former homeschooler, I have had more of a difficult time getting that socialization with them in a traditional school during this whole pandemic than I ever did as a homeschooler. Ever. Remember when that was the big argument? And now everyone's now, and even with it, because with homeschooling, you could go out and do so many things. And they even figured out, different co-ops figured out how to continue doing that, even following like pandemic protocol. Whereas, you know, traditional schools, they haven't been able to figure that, you know, some of them were able to figure it out before we learned through contact tracing that this is not where transmissions are happening. I saw, and speaking of that, here's another report. So CDC slipped in some data about asymptomatic spread. Georgie Borman over at The Federalist. I think a lot of people missed this. I was one of them because there was so much coming out. Even I can't get everything that's coming out of the fire hose. That's why we need a lot of voices. January 29th, there was a report and it said schools might be able to safely open with the appropriate mitigation efforts, such as masking and not allowing student cohorts to mix in place. They looked at 17 rural Wisconsin schools, only 7 cases. And these were older students, by the way, by older, like senior and high school students. Only 7 were linked to transmission out of nearly 5,000 students. No staff were infected. Wow. And again, the older students, because they were talking about the receptors and your respiratory system, things like that, they the report, which you probably haven't seen, it shows that children might be, this is from the report, quote, children might be more likely to be asymptomatic carriers of coronavirus than are adults. Their apparent lack of transmission is in schools is consistent with recent research, which found an asymptomatic attack rate of only 0.7% within households and a lower rate of transmission from children than from adults. However, they said this study was unable to rule out asymptomatic transmission within the school setting because surveillance testing was not conducted. They looked at 54 different households. They looked at 77,758 participants, and they published a preprint in December. I mean, And they looked at the estimated mean household secondary attack rate from symptomatic index, blah, 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 asymptomatic, presymptomatic index cases. So what they're saying is that if the contagiousness of people without symptoms is not what is driving the spread of coronavirus, then no restriction on public life, I mean, besides staying home when you're sick, nothing else justifies it. That's what this report says. And so the CDC's pandemic planning scenario, the best estimates for the transmission, they're saying that none of this makes sense. None of the lockdowns make sense. The mask mandates don't make sense. None of it makes sense. Wow. I would say also that the survey, the number of people surveyed for this, I mean, we're talking like over 77,000 in one, 5,000 students in another. That's pretty significant. And it's not just from, they did like one in Wisconsin, then they looked elsewhere around the United States to take these other groups. Whew. This is actual, solid, legitimate data with impeachable, not unimpeachable methodology. Have you heard that in any of your news?
The CDC has been saying it for weeks and weeks.
No, but the news doesn't want to report it.
Exactly.
In fact, when you had the CDC director, the woman, come out and say, yeah, we need schools to reopen, etc., and referred to this report, this survey that was published, and yeah, listen to this, listen to her.
But I also want to be clear that there is increasing data to suggest that schools can safely reopen, and that safe reopening does not suggest that teachers need to be vaccinated.
So teachers don't need to be vaccinated. And then Joe Biden was called on this, and they had to have Jen Psaki say, well, she was, and this was a press availability with reporters virtually. Literally, it was a press release sent out, and reporters were invited to have discussions with CDC here. And Biden came out through Jen Psaki and said, well, she was just speaking in a personal capacity. No, she wasn't. It just undermined your narrative and really compromised your relationship with teachers unions. Who is prioritized here? Is it kids or the unions? Is it kids or teachers unions? Who is it? We have a lot more on the way. We got Florida man too. And then coming up later on in the program, Congressman Chip Roy from the Republic of Texas joins us because, are Democrats going to prevail in arguments to get the federal government involved in Texas's grid? And why this matters to you is because all the Green New Deal stuff that you're going to be potentially living under, if it passes, well, that's one of the things that Texas had to deal with, and with power outages and all of that. We'll talk to him about that coming up as well, so you don't want to miss.
It's the Dana Show.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right, so a couple of stories here. There was a man, Florida man, clocked driving 112 miles per hour on U.S. 31 while he was under the influence of a controlled substance. I don't know why I had to say it like that, but Miami County. Yeah, but here's the thing. This was in Indiana. It was a Florida man who was going 120 or 112 miles per hour. And I guess, like, I mean, because he's from Hialeah, Florida, and he smelled like liquor and marijuana, that he was incarcerated in Miami County Jail, 112, and he was apparently high as a kite and other things. How do you not realize you're going that fast, though? Because apparently he didn't, and I just find that a little bit difficult to believe. You know, how do you not know that you're going 112 miles an hour, especially? He was in a Hyundai? Hyundai? Hyundai. Isn't that how you say it?
Hyundai.
Hyundai. Okay. Let's see. There's a couple here. I had a couple of you dare me to read this story, and you people are horrible. A Florida Keys man. How do I say this? Here, Kane, I'll share this with you. Some of you people from Florida who are like, I dare you to read this. I bet you won't, LOL. And then it's like, you know that I feel like you're challenging me. He did something personal in front of a sunbathing woman. And then when the boyfriend was like, what are you doing to Armando Quevedo, 56, they fought. This 56-year-old Florida man faces charges of exposure of his male copulatory organ and aggravated battery. And when the deputy got there, it took several people to detain this guy. The boyfriend was snorkeling and got up and saw a show. Golly, stay with us, more in store.
Americans have different, deeply held beliefs on this particular issue. And I absolutely respect that. By the way, I have never sued the nuns, any nuns. I have taken on the federal government. But I've never sued any affiliation of nuns.
That's not entirely right. Welcome back to the show. I'm Dana Lash, danalash.com. Go and subscribe to Chapter and Verse. Make sure you check out the Facebook page as well, because a video of my discussion with Sean Hannity yesterday is up there as well. But it's good to be with you. Welcome back. Welcome back. Our third hour, we have Congressman Chip Roy from the Republic of Texas going to be joining us. That's the nominee for Health and Human Services, oddly enough, the Attorney General, Xavier Becerra, who doesn't actually really know anything about. Just saying, he doesn't really know anything about medicine. This is one of the examples when I say that Joe Biden makes these like really bizarre selections for different positions. To me, it is I don't know why. I would, and I'm glad that Becerra is not AG, but I would understand it better for AG than not. I mean, again, I'm glad that he's not, but it's just weird. I don't get it. It's weird. But that's not entirely true, because, you know, this idea that he never sued any nuns is not exactly correct. Because this is the conversation of the Little Sisters of the Poor. He sued the Trump administration to force the end of the policy that Little Sisters of the Poor were claiming from underneath. They were claiming that as their exemption. An exemption from underneath that. I'll rephrase it, for contraceptive coverage in Obamacare. And so it's semantics. He's trying to say, well, I never actually did that. But Rich Lowry had a really good piece where he says, getting embroiled in litigation with nuns usually isn't something that somebody wants on their resume. And he discusses how out of jurisdiction it was for Becerra to even pursue that in the first place. And this was, you know, how the roots of this litigation began in 2011 with the implementation of Obamacare. And there was a narrow exemption, and Little Sisters of the Poor wanted a broader exemption. And then they used the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty as their representation, because they were going to be utterly destroyed with fines. I mean, they are nuns. Why are they providing contraception? Do you understand how stupid this is? Whatever happened to separation of church and state? All those people. So the accommodation, the so-called accommodation that they were given, Lowry notes, it involved the nuns signing a form stating moral objections to the coverage, which would then be included on the health organization's plan anyway. That was the accommodation that was offered to them. And so after the Trump administration was voted in, they wanted a complete and total exemption. So it was resolved in 2017. And the rule was that the Little Sisters of the Poor would no longer be forced to engage in that and provide contraception, etc. For recreational purposes, I might add. This was never about health purposes. Anyone who says that is either lying to you or they're that stupid. Because it was never about health issues. Sometimes endometriosis, etc., can be treated with the, and I've seen it, prescription of like birth control, things like that. And that was what was never in dispute. It was for recreational purposes, which was that coverage was being disputed. And again, with nuns, why, seriously? And they, and yes, they did. They provided the, out of the, what was it, 5 or 6 selections. Yeah, there were 3 that they already, as a result of what I just said, that were included in that. And so 5 years of litigation, and he sued after the nuns had already been through everything. And they're just, he wanted a crushing burden, Lowry says, on the nuns. If they didn't sign onto an arrangement that violated their faith, he wants them to be subjected to daily fines that would add up to tens of millions of dollars annually. I mean, we're talking about, Larry says, remember, these aren't corporate polluters. They aren't inside traders. They aren't tech giants. They are an order of nuns founded by a saint who begged in the streets of 18th century France so she could carry out her charitable work. It was vengeful. It was an ideologically motivated. It's ideologically motivated lawfare. I'm not even quite sure why in the world this was even considered as part of his jurisdiction. And he also fought them over abortion. The group of Catholic nuns affected by their California's universal abortion coverage mandate. It was the missionary Guadalupanas of the Holy Spirit, because they did not want to provide abortion coverage in their health plans. And he sued the agencies that would have been giving them any exemption to try to force them into into certain behavior. It was about them, and he realized the optic of suing them directly, so he would try to go through the regulatory agencies and sue them. So he's up there trying to be all smarmy. Well, I didn't sue nuns. No, you engaged in lawfare against them. That's what you did. Petty and vengeful. How in the ever-loving hell is this guy up for HHS? Now, I don't know if he won't make it. I mean, I don't think that there are any Democrats that are opposing him right now. I mean, Joe Manchin, maybe, because so far, Neera Tanden's lost some Democrats, and Manchin's really enjoying his catbird seat. But his little smarmy remark, well, I didn't actually sue any nuns. Well, no, you engaged in lawfare against them. That's exactly what you did. All right, a couple of things still. I want to make sure that we're getting into. I have actually a lot of stuff up here. Make sure you subscribe to the newsletter, because there's some things that we didn't get to that I actually, and there's several things that I've even added in this hour that have come up as we've been on air. So one thing in particular, I'm going to get into some of the cancel culture stuff with Amazon. Remember when we had on Abigail Schreier, and she had a book about transgender issues? She's not the only one who has done this. There's another book that is out, and we're actually going to have the author of this book. What is it, Monday? Tomorrow. Oh, no, tomorrow. Sorry, tomorrow. He's going to be on the show tomorrow. Ryan Anderson. He has a book about the transgender, all of the controversy and everything. It's called When Harry Became Sally, Responding to the Transgender Moment. Now, it had been up at Amazon and other places. Anderson is the president of the Ethics and Public Policy Center, And he's done a lot of work with different scholars. I mean, he's not, he is not a, how do I say it? He's not like a red meat YouTuber. You know, he's not bombastic. He is an academic. And it is an academic examination of what has been going on with this issue and responses to it. It is rigorously academic. And Amazon has removed it. They had a lot of people that were screaming at them to take this book away, to stop selling it, even though they'll sell Mein Kampf and, right, you know, they sell all other kinds of garbage. And, I mean, they excluded it from the marketplace. Lolita's up there, I think, but they excluded this in the marketplace. Wow. So it's been effectively banned. It was published in 2018, which was crazy. This is when, I mean, this book, and it was removed just, you know, this week from not just Amazon, but Kindle and Audible as well. And Amazon, from what I understand, has just recently changed their terms, and they do not allow what they consider hate speech. Again, Mein Kampf is still on there. They will get involved and they will eliminate books and not allow those books to be on their marketplace if it involves anything of that nature, which, again, that is also arbitrary. The revolution is complete when the language is perfect. To describe something as hate, I don't believe in the phrase hate speech. I don't believe in the phrase hate speech. Now, I believe in hateful language. I believe in hateful actions, obviously, but hate speech? There is speech that is hateful, but hate speech is a political term. It is not something that is, it's not something that is actually in the science of words. It's not etymology. This is a political definition that is more often used to describe things that progressives dislike as opposed to things that are legitimately hateful. Anything that they dislike is considered to be hate speech. When you are asking genuine questions, legitimate questions about transgenderism, that is considered hate speech. Again, I use the example of the female feminist who is an academic from Canada who is banned off Twitter, the furthest thing from a bomb thrower you could imagine. And she ended up getting canceled. She got banned from Twitter because she was asking, and I thought, like, questions that had not been asked before. She was asking about the issue of fluidity and hormones and genuine things, but she was being very honest in her questions. And when she wouldn't get full answers from individuals, you know, she would have a follow-up question. Yes, well, but you didn't answer this aspect of it. And she was very polite, very civil, but I guess the conversation was too honest, and so she had her account permanently suspended. And the screenshots of the tweets, I was actually quite shocked because I kept thinking, well, this was like over a year ago. But I thought, you know, surely there's probably something in there. There really wasn't at all. There was not at all. It was just the fact that her questioning this issue, asking very serious, legitimate questions because you're genuinely interested, and it's from a perspective of academic curiosity. Questions are considered to be a symptom of disbelief, and that cannot be allowed. If you are questioning their narrative, if you're questioning progressive narratives, questioning progressive ideology, the question itself is looked at as an act the objection itself is, it's looked at as though it's like an act of resistance. It's like an act of protest. Question and protest are not the same thing, but that's how it's being viewed by the left. If you simply ask a question, then that is you signaling that you are not buying and believing them fully. The presence of questions means that full control is not possible. And that's the problem. So questions aren't even allowed for that reason. We're going to talk to Ryan tomorrow because I really am legitimately fascinated by this for that particular aspect. I mean, I have my viewpoints on transgenderism and typically things that don't infringe on my rights, I don't care about. Well, when you start infringing on my rights and trying to dictate me how I can speak, then I have a problem. But the fact that you can't even so much as ask a question is really bothersome to me, because we're teaching people to not be critical thinkers. And that's done on purpose. We have more to come, including talking with Congressman Chip Roy here soon on just what is the latest. Well, seriously, what is the latest, though, as with the grid? And what does this mean? I mean, this is basically the Green New Deal on a smaller scale. So
follow Dana on Twitter at DLash and official Dana Lash on Facebook.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five, brought to you by Caltech.
So this is interesting. Today, the Biden administration is to share a declassified version of a U.S. intelligence report from 2018 that concludes that the Saudi crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, approved the 2018 killing of journalist Jamal Khashoggi via Reuters and NBC. Now, keep in mind that there's a lot of other things in play here than just obviously the headline, because Khashoggi was, you can read what he said in terms of politics about Palestine and Israel and Saudi Arabia, etc. So there's a lot of other things at play here. And I'm wondering, my questions are the timing of this release and its effect related to the Abraham Accords. So that's something that we're definitely going to watch. A murder suspect cut out his neighbor's heart and cooked it with potatoes before he fed it to his family and killed a four-year-old. Lawrence Paul Anderson from Oklahoma. This is a horrific story. He is in prison, clearly. Stay with us. Chip Roy next.
Listen to The Dana Show on your Alexa by opening the app settings and linking your podcast service to your Alexa. And then say, Alexa, play The Dana Show podcast.
So, welcome back to the show, Dana Lash, danalash.com, and I'll be at CPAC on Saturday in Orlando, and I'm very excited to go to a state where, I mean, I love Texas, but I feel like Ron DeSantis is a little less with the masks and stuff, right? Especially since we have the judge in my county saying we got to wear these masks till May 25th. Wear 6 feet of masks at all times. You know, that actually the only time that this recommendation would have been helpful is when we were all freezing to death last week. Yeah. Because, you know, it keeps your, it's like a heating thing for yourself. Joining us right now from the beautiful Republic of Texas, Congressman Chip Roy, who joins us from probably colder D.C. Congressman, always good to see you. And I'm so glad that we have power back. I got to ask you about this because you're a native Texan. This was, from what I understand, nothing like this has been seen in Texas. What we saw with like the ice and the snow, the amount of ice across the state consistently since like 1903 or 1908, something to that effect. So it really was a once in a lifetime thing. And I tell people, don't mock Texans about this stuff because it's like a hurricane hit in Iowa.
No, you're exactly right, Dana. You know, this is one of those once in a lifetime, once in a generation kinds of things. And, you know, I was pointing this out when people up north are mocking us for dealing with this. Like, we don't do that when it's 115 in July in Minneapolis and they don't have air conditioning. And, you know, we don't have a fleet of trucks to move snow in Austin, Texas, and we shouldn't. It would be irresponsible to do that. Obviously, there's some things we need to do to fix the grid and to fix pricing and to make sure power's up and running. And we've been working on that hard. But, you know, we were hit personally, as you were. I mean, we didn't have power for a while. We worked through it, had our fire going, and I lived out of my well pump house. We live on 10 acres and have a well, and I had to sit down there with a generator and a heat lamp trying to keep everything warm. We lost hot water heater, but that's all small potatoes compared to people who've been, you know, I've got residents in Harper, Texas, who've been without power for about 11 or 12 days. People in Camp Wood, Texas, near Lakey and Real County, beautiful part of the state, who were hit hard, a nursing home. We got a Black Hawk helicopter to airlift water in for them. So it's a real problem for Texans. Look, this is pretty simple. We didn't have the baseload capacity that we needed at the time, and we need to make changes, and we'll do that, and I know that's what they're talking about in the legislature.
Now, I wanted to ask you about this because, and we're talking with Congressman Chip Roy from Texas, immediately people were trying to politicize it, which I thought, you know, let our heat and our power come back on first, and then we can sit here and we can throw punches rhetorically about the politics of it all. But everyone kept saying, well, this is what happens when you get deregulation. This is what happens when Texas decides to do its own grid. But that really actually isn't what described what happened with this situation. I wanted to know if you could talk a little bit about that. And is there a potential threat of after this Texas lawmakers being persuaded to, you know, rejoin the rest of the country and becoming part of the federal grid or the national grid, so to speak?
Well, let me start with that and work backwards. Obviously, as a Federalist and as a member of Congress, I'll be doing everything I can to fight any move to have any forcing from, you know, FERC and from national forces to try to force Texas into the national grid. I want to hold Texas independent, and I'll work with the Texas legislature to do that. Look, for people out there who don't know, our overall capacity is generated roughly about 52.3% natural gas, about 22 or 3% wind, about 15% coal, and then a smaller amount, 4 or 5% nuclear, a little bit solar, and that's your mix. What happened? Well, you had half that wind power freeze up, the turbines freeze up. The natural gas at 50% of our overall capacity, it had some issues too, right? Because it wasn't winterized fully. You had some pressure drop off, had some difficulty moving the gas and get it out of the wellhead and get it to where it needs to go. We normally have a great, strong grid that works great during the heat, works great through the summer. We're able to deal with the load that we need. But when we have policies that move us away from coal and nuclear, which was the base of our capacity generation up until about a decade ago or so, and we moved more to wind and more to gas. Look, I love gas, right? Cheap, clean burning, driving CO2 levels down. It makes electricity affordable for Texans. We just need to be mindful of that. Make sure it's winterized properly. Make sure you got plenty of coal and nuclear, which has on-site fuel, and then get our system to where we don't have that happen again. We learn from this and do it, but Texas needs to protect Texas. We don't need Washington to interfere with Texas.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I love the diversification of our energy portfolio, so to speak, but you know, Texas being it's an odd state, and not every state should be treated the same with regards to that, because you don't have the same amount of sun or the same amount of wind or the same temperatures. Right. And some states don't get as cold as others do. But it seems as though the left wants this like universal kind of top down approach to energy. At least that's what I've been hearing from a lot of leftists, even some of my friends who are a little bit more for it. They think that, oh, well, no, what works great for one state is going to be good for another if you just do it properly. That's a nonsense statement.
Well, no, that's exactly right. I mean, and let's keep in mind, one of the reasons why some places in the Northeast and otherwise were slower to adopt gas is because they're colder, right? I mean, that's part of the issue. We've got a lot of that, and we need to make sure that we're doing what we need to protect the grid. But understand that subsidies and policy had a lot to do with this, right? And I know you've talked about this on the show, that, you know, when you subsidize wind, basically a wind generating company can rest easy knowing that they're going to be protected, even though you got to have coal, nuclear, and gas make up the gap if it's a windless day or if the turbines don't turn. Like their life is a lot easier. They're getting billions of dollars of subsidies. We need to open this up to make sure that we've got the right competition for the best power sources, but also be mindful as a state on the policies on things like winterization and so forth. What we don't want to do is throw the baby out with the bathwater and take an otherwise strong, resilient, reliable grid when we plan it out through our peak moments in the summer and toss it overboard. So the left wants to use this, right? Rahm Emanuel, never let a crisis go to waste. Mm-hmm. They want to use this as another excuse to insert government. We're dealing with that right now, not to change topics, because you probably want to stay on energy. But right now on the Equality Act, it just came off the floor of the House. You know, this just bogus bill that will insert the federal government into all aspects of life and make us bow down to the altar of the social elites and follow their way of life. We Christians must go cower in the corner and not hold on to our belief. That's what's happening. This is all about power. It's about fences and razor wire. It's about taking over our energy grid. It's about telling you, what you have to do with your kids and how they're taught in schools. This is all a power grab by leftists, and we're going to have to stand up against every aspect of it.
Yeah, and I'm glad we're talking with Congressman Chip Roy. You know, you mentioned that the Equality Act, which is really not, doesn't seem to be entirely about equality when you're disenfranchising women. And ultimately, I mean, Joe Biden, the Biden administration has been accused of, you know, quote unquote, erasing women. When I look at this, why is the government defining or getting involved in any of this to define, our speech where it concerns things that what is or is not bigotry or, I'm just trying to figure out where in the world the federal government fits in here.
Well, you're asking the exact right question. Literally, I was just down on the floor with my friend Jim Jordan. I'm on the House Judiciary Committee. Going after Chairman Nadler and all the Democrats down there pushing this so-called Equality Act when it's nothing of the sort. It flies right in the face of our founding principles, and you know this well. Here are just a few of things that the bill would do. The Equality Act would be used to force a universal right to abortion up until birth. Force
that
doctors
we would pay
to perform
for,
abortions
taxpayers.
And gender procedures that are against their moral beliefs. Force medical professionals to perform surgeries, administer hormone blockers, even if it's against their medical advice. force schools, churches, hospitals, and other institutions to recognize a chosen gender. I could go on and on. Clearly, it would interfere with women's sports and athletics. Here's the bottom line, Dana. Again, it's about power. This is about the tyranny of the left telling us how we're going to run our lives and telling us what to believe. And this is cancel culture. Mm-hmm. This is you will be made to follow our rules, obey our rules, or you will be canceled, you will be fined, you will be punished, you'll be imprisoned, you'll be ostracized. You know, my colleagues in the Congress who voted to object on January 6th, I notably did not. I had a different view of the Constitution on that. But my colleagues who did so are being ostracized by Democrats, by corporate America, simply for engaging in speech and debate. We are canceling people for their beliefs. We are canceling my friend Ryan Anderson. You probably have Ryan Anderson.
He's on tomorrow.
Show. And he had his book pulled off of Amazon. His book was called Harry Became Sally.
Yeah, and that was a very academically based. He's not a bomb thrower. I mean, it was a very academic approach to the subject, and that's where the other concern comes in. You know, we're talking about the Equality Act here with Congressman Chip Roy, because now it's viewed, whether or not something is viewed as being discriminatory, because obviously there is real discrimination, but it feels like, that's what they're trying to do. The federal government wants to widen that as an apparatus for control to include anything which challenges any ideology. And as we were just talking about last segment, even questions like Ryan Anderson's book, I mean, he's asking some very legitimate questions. Questions are viewed as protest against the prevailing ideology of the ruling party. And so asking questions, it's viewed as, you know, some kind of resistance. And if we can classify, you know, these questions as discrimination or hate speech, we can shut down any and all critical thought or critical discussion about this, no matter how sincerely academic and genuine in spirit it may be. And that's where we are. And I've seen some clips from the debate, Congressman. That's where it's even out on the floor with some of your, you know, contemporaries across the aisle.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we're having colleagues for simply doing their job and going down and engaging in free speech who are being canceled. This is why I strongly oppose the articles of impeachment against the president, because they were trying to take free speech and language to be used in the legal context of impeachment, which was wrong. And again, as I said, it's about power, but there's another aspect of this, which I didn't mention before. It's about ignoring the consent of the governed, right? That is a fundamentally important part of the Declaration of Independence. And we often, you know, we talk about the sort of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, you know, our lives, our fortunes, our sacred honor. But remember that consent of the governed part. Mm. What good is law, and what faith can you put in laws that don't have the consent of the governed? This is kind of what happened with Obamacare. It's jammed through on reconciliation. You got Democrats with a razor-thin majority in the House, a razor-thin, you know, 50-50 tie in the Senate, and a presidential election which was dubious. And they're trying to jam through the most radical left-wing agenda in the history of the country. That is not the consent of the governed. It's just simply not. And so this undermines the rule of law. It rips apart the threads that hold the country together. And we need to stand up strongly in opposition to this and remind them they don't get to do this. And we don't have to follow the things that they're saying. We believe these are unconstitutional. They fly in the face of our God-given, unalienable rights. Then they are unlawful and really, frankly, without basis on them, on their merits.
Yeah. No. We're talking with Congressman Chip Roy. Last question for you, Congressman. I know you're busy in D.C. today. Obviously, the big discussion on immigration, the soundbite that's making its rounds with Jen Psaki yesterday talking to Peter Ducey, saying, well, you know, we're not ripping children out of the arms of parents, when she's speaking of unaccompanied minors, which is kind of a weird thing, because if they're unaccompanied, their parents aren't there in the first place. But this facility that really launched all of this, the reopening of Carrizo Springs, I was telling people earlier, you know, this was a former man camp for oil workers near an oil field. And because of pandemic rules and housing of, you know, individuals, this is an agency contract with DHS operating this facility. It is real. I'm asking you to speak to this. It is real. The fear and tragedy of children who are trafficked across the border, who are exploited to get other adults in because of the Flores Amendment. And so to me, it seems, I'm actually not against Biden opening this facility, but it is hurt and rescue, because they created a problem that they now have to address with the opening of the facility that was only open for a month under Trump. Your thoughts on this and the actual reality of that children are facing here.
Well, Dana, I mean, I would love to talk to you on another longer segment, come back on and talk about this at length, because I have a great passion for this. Democrats love to put out their compassion for immigrants, but it's a lie. That they are doing things in the false name of compassion that undermine immigrants and undermine American security. It empowers cartels, cartels that right now are profiting by moving these human beings across our border for profit, putting them in stash houses, endangering them, thereby endangering us as citizens because of the illegal activity, the fentanyl and drugs that then come along with all this illegal activity. They refuse to secure the border. Biden issues executive orders specifically to stop securing the border, stop using Title 42 on the health basis to stop pandemic traffic, stop using return to Mexico policy to make sure that we can have an agreement and leave people in Mexico. That increases the pressure, increases human caravans up in Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador through Mexico, empowers the cartels to create and continue this. And then guess what? Biden and company then get stuck. And they're getting a little bit hung by their own decisions because they're out there and their radical left are talking about kids in cages when it was Obama Biden 5 years ago that created these facilities to be able to house people. Now they're going to have to use the facilities because they created the very environment that's causing the pressure of people to come across the border. And now they're getting hung by their left because they're doing what you have to responsibly do, which is try to keep these kids safe and figure out who they're with or unaccompanied and try to protect them while we figure out what the deal is. They create this mess. Now they're having to live in it. And we got to call them out for it and try to keep pushing to secure our border and Flores, as you pointed out, and asylum rules, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to, boy, what a fight that is. And it just, I feel like it's only going to get worse at the border, too, as more and more people, if he ever gets his cabinet filled, if they ever, you know, stop messing around in the Senate. Congressman, always good to see you. Congressman Chip Roy, are you going to be at CPAC?
I am. I'll be there on Sunday with a panel with Russ Vogt, the president's director of the Office of Management and Budget, talking about spending. I think we're the warm-up act for the president, I think, on Sunday. So I'll be there Sunday.
There you go. We'll be watching for sure. I'll be there just Saturday. But good luck on your panel. I know it'll be a very, very interesting and thoughtful discussion. Congressman Chip Roy of Texas, good to see you, my friend. Thank you.
You too. God bless you and Chris, your whole family.
Yes. Godspeed. Thanks.
It's the Dana Show.
I was telling Kane and Rachel and Steve that I don't know how we got on this subject, but I didn't know that OnlyFans don't Google it.
Oh my gosh, why do you say that?
Because it's a
I didn't know you're gonna bring
it's
this
like
up.
it's like a gentleman's site.
We're talking about premium Twitter, remember?
Yeah, oh that's right. So thank you. That's why.
Let's move it there.
Well, no, because I was talking about how so Twitter is thinking about they're implementing a thing called super follows where you can charge people for like extra tweets or things like that or some they're trying like basically extra content from Twitter and we started talking about I wonder if that's why people were so mad at Substack and then somehow OnlyFans came up and they can't believe that I actually up until a month ago thought that was a site about sports. I legitimately did. I thought it was like for super fans. And then I was seeing something on Twitter and I'm like, why is that? That doesn't look like it's sports. So there you go.
You live and learn.
Dana's world.
You live and learn.
All right. Kane, today in stupidity.
All right. Richard Trump, for whatever reason, believes the words he's saying here.
Trump, I don't know so what. Far, he's helped working people in the first 5 weeks more than the last administration did in 4 years and some of the previous administrations did over their period of time.
Clear lie, because thousands upon thousands of jobs were lost. Union jobs,
yeah.
Even. Richard Trump,
mm-hmm.
in the first several days of this administration. So mm-hmm. you're clearly just, I don't know what you're doing.
Lying. Folks, tomorrow's Friday. We'll talk about cancel culture. Ryan Anderson's going to join us. And make sure you subscribe, chapter and verse. You got some stuff coming at you tonight. God bless. Have a great night, folks. Back with you tomorrow.